We're only 2 days away from quite possibly ending the worst year on record. 2021 will be around the corner, but you're only a few seconds away from the Wrestling Guys podcast, and that starts right now. All right, continue from the basement in the Forgotten Borough, Staten Island, New York. This is the Wrestling Guys podcast. This is the fans' perspective on all things on the world of WWE and the world of professional wrestling. We are your hosts. I'm Eric, otherwise known as Fizz. With me, as always, my tag team partner, Chris. We'll call him Never Miss right now. 2021 around the corner. We're saying goodbye to a terrible year. We're saying goodbye to another fallen wrestler. And with that, I'm going to get the virtual clink in memoriam. And we'll start the show, as usual, in safety, in the comfort of our own homes, and over Skype. How we feeling? Hope everyone's doing well and staying safe.
Hanging in there. Glad that, as I'm sure everyone is, that 2020 is coming to an end. 2021, just a few days away as we record. And hopefully everybody is staying safe and had a nice holiday. And as we kick things off here, before we get into our topic, I want to quickly just touch on the passing of Luke Harper or Brody Lee.
I got to say, John Huber to us, you know,
real name,
non-wrestling fans. Luke Harper in WWE, Brody Lee, the Exalted One in AEW, and what a shot in the gut this weekend. I got a text from my sister's boyfriend, who's also a wrestling fan, tells me Brody Lee died, and I'm like, get the hell out of here. And it's stupid. It's going to be stupid to say when I say this, but like, I was so concerned. I was in the fantasy football championship finals, and I was so worried about me losing because he had Alvin Kamara and he was whipping my ass. And then you get the news that, oh, Luke Harper died. Brody Lee died, John Huber. And you're like, I was like, dude, what are you, an asshole? You're worried about fantasy football. This guy just lost his life at 41. He had two young kids. He had a wife. And it just showed me how life right now, man, is just in an instant. That's it. And if 2020 couldn't kick you hard enough in the nuts this year, it's really just not going out without a fight. And Danny Hodge was also passed away on the same day as Luke Harper. Which is also a terrible thing. And just a few weeks ago, Pat Patterson, and just, I just feel like every week, man, I'm texting somebody saying, hey, can you believe so-and-so died? Can you believe so-and-so passed away? And it's just, it's one after another after another. And this one too was just to see the outpouring of support from both WWE and AEW and all the wrestlers that just telling you what a great guy he was, what a family man he was. Just, dude, it was bad, man. It was emotional. I got a little emotional myself thinking about it, me having two young sons of my own. And just, you know, 41, man, way too soon and totally tragic.
And seemingly details, as far as from what I've seen surrounding his passing, non-COVID related lung issue. And that's pretty much all that there is right now that I've seen. And, you know, that's okay if his family wants to keep whatever happened private. Just always sad when somebody passes away, especially one so young. And I think for us, John Huber, Brody Lee, Luke Harper, there was always, I think, a lot of potential of what he could have been. And I know he was definitely one of those guys that when he was released or asked for his release from WWE, fans were kind of like,
I hated it.
You hated it that they released him, or were you happy that they released him?
I was happy that he asked for his release because he realized that he's probably only going to get to a certain ceiling there, and he wanted to do something better for himself, and I totally agree with him. And if you listen to his interview after he left and debuted AEW on Talk is Jericho, it's really an eye-opener to the behind-the-scenes of WWE and the creative process. And he was such a talented guy. I loved him in the Wyatt family. Besides Bray, he was my favorite. He was a great wrestler. He had great matches with Dolph Ziggler, won a TLC for the Intercontinental title. He had great matches with AJ Styles when he was in that brief little main event push for a little bit, you know, with those, you know, that Wyatt family feud with Randy and Bray. I always thought that he should have been plugged into that match and had it be a triple threat. And they just didn't, see him like that. They always saw him as some, like, the guy's from Rochester, New York, and they want him to do like a Southern backwoods accent, like, you know, he's from Deliverance or some shit, and like, that's just not him. They could have did something so much better with him. It was a lot of, yes, it what could have been had creative gotten their head out of their ass, I think, to be honest with you, because he was there, he performed, you know. And in that respect too, injuries did get in the way, because he did have that nice run with the Bludgeon Brothers, and they were tag champs. And then, you know, they got one of them. I think Rowan got hurt, and they kind of just killed it after that, which I don't know why they did. But it's disappointing, man, to say the least. He had a ton of potential, and I love that he went to AEW and he was the Exalted One. And it was just like, damn, here we go. Like, this guy could get a big push. This guy, could, you know, he has a major faction behind him. I was excited. I hated that they released him, but I was excited that he's the one that saw that he could do so much better if he left. You know, some guys get caught in that rut of being WWE. They never want to go anywhere.
He was definitely underrated and underused, as we can point that out about so many people on the WWE roster right now. He went to AEW, as you said, as the Exalted One, leader of the Dark Order. And then, you know, he won the TNT title there and then just kind of disappeared. At least from what I saw, I mean, I don't watch it every week like I would like to, but I guess now we know why. It seems like he was
he got sick suddenly. His wife released a statement today, and you know, I got a the reporter, and his name slips my mind now, from the Pro Wrestling Torch, who was let go today because he decided to write a remark saying that his family owed it to the fans to tell them whether it was COVID related or not. And it's none of our business. It's none of that guy's business. We're not that, you know, you need to stop being that much of a fucking mark that you need to know why a celebrity died or why, you know, what happened. If it says non-COVID related, just let it go. You know, his wife said that he got sick suddenly. He declined very rapidly. He was at the Mayo Clinic. He had COVID test after COVID test after COVID test, and all of them were negative. And He got sick suddenly, and unfortunately it declined and it worsened, and he passed away. And that's all you need to know. The man left two young kids behind, a wife behind. We don't need to know why he died or the circumstances surrounding his death. I know, especially us wrestling fans, we're quick to, you know, we want to point out why this person died or why they were taken so suddenly. But you know what? The fact that he's being remembered the way he is, the fact that if you saw Raw this past Monday, the tributes, Xavier Woods, Ricochet, wearing armbands from Brody Lee, doing the discus clothesline, Drew McIntyre in the beginning, Tom Phillips on commentary. You know what type of man that was in the life he lived, and that's when you got to leave him the fuck alone, leave his family alone, and just let him, just remember him for the good stuff, not try to stir up the BS. And people like that, those reporters, they're the lowest form of life, and I'll say it right now. I'm glad you got let go. Sorry. If I got to recommend one thing, one of my favorite matches, and this is when, and two of my favorite factions, the Wyatt Family, the Shield, Elimination Chamber 2014. Money. Great, great match. Two factions coming face to face, and the Wyatt Family actually goes over in that one, which is fantastic. So if you really want to check something out and see good Luke Harper, that's the first match that comes up, comes to my head, honestly.
And I'm sure in the future we'll do a whole kind of profile on the Wyatt Family and talk about them and highlight their matches, as Royal Rumble is only a few weeks away, 5 weeks away at this point.
Ooh, shifting. Let's go. Yeah,
we are going to start watching Royal Rumble matches from the past to get ready for the future Royal Rumble match that is coming. And we're going to highlight, I think we're going to try to do one from each decade. You know, I wanted to shift into a lighter note, you know, as we talked about Luke Harper, but now we got to talk about Pat Patterson, and because you can't talk about the Royal Rumble without Pat Patterson, and he is the creator of the Royal Rumble. He was the mastermind behind it. If you listen to Bruce Pritchard, this, you know, we're going to start with watching Royal Rumble 1988, and if you listen to Bruce Pritchard, this actually isn't the first time that they did it. So Pat Patterson and Dick Ebersol were the two that kind of ironed everything out, but Pat Patterson recently passing away himself, and we have him to thank for, in my opinion, is the greatest wrestling attraction of all time.
I mean, it's definitely my favorite, but besides the spectacle of WrestleMania, Royal Rumble definitely is my favorite pay-per-view of the year, just because of the Rumble itself. I mean, if you think about it, I think if my research serves me correctly, Pat Patterson, coming from the San Francisco territory back in the day, they used to do something similar in that territory. So he brought it over himself to WWE, and they test ran it a bunch of times in house shows to see how it would work, iron out the details, right. How would it work? first two come in, and then every couple of minutes, every 2 minutes, 3 minutes, another person comes in. The only person to eliminate, only way to eliminate them is over the top rope. You hit the feet, and you know they got enough positive feedback where they were like, all right, let's run this as a televised event. So Royal Rumble 88 is actually the first Rumble, obviously, but it's the only one that was not on pay per view. It was actually on the USA Network. And it was right, yeah. done as counter programming, I think, right? Was it the NWA Bunkhouse Stampede? If my research serves me correctly, it was actually counter programming originally to that. So Jim Crockett trying to get into the pay per view business runs the Bunkhouse Stampede, and Vince McMahon was like, "Yeah, screw you, Crockett. I'm gonna run the Royal Rumble on free TV." And that's similarly how the Clash of the Champions came about as well, running Clash of Champions in response to WrestleMania 4, which is pretty crazy how you get some of these classic, you know, you get the classic match like the Royal Rumble in response to an NWA pay-per-view. Pretty nuts.
Have you ever seen that Bunkhouse Stampede?
No, I have not, actually.
It is one of the dumbest gimmick matches I think I've ever seen. So the concept of this match was everybody starting in the ring inside of a steel cage. And the way you win is by pushing them out of the cage. And you literally had, I think Dusty Rhodes won the match. It's on the network for those who want to watch it. But he literally pushed someone up the cage, over the top, and then down to the floor. And that's how you eliminated people. And I'm just like, this does not.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious. Yeah, that's how it works.
Sounds like when I'm playing like wrestling figures with my son and the cage breaks apart on its own. How are you pushing somebody through a cage? So it's essentially a battle royal with a cage. God, man.
They're climbing the cage and Dusty Rhodes is pushing him out. And it's like, why would I let you do that to me?
Thanks. I'm trying to escape. I appreciate the boost, but you're going to win the match. Thank you. You know what? You really didn't sell me on wanting to watch it, but based on that stupid ass concept alone, I actually may just turn in for that match.
Yeah. Check out that match. Cause it's worth watching just in the like ridiculousness that it is.
That's crazy. I mean, and then, you know, so today we're starting with the 88 Royal Rumble, the very first one. Only 20 guys, too.
Yeah.
Not 30, as we're so used to, or that 1 year where they ran the 40. And also, the Royal Rumble is not the main event of the match, of the entire event, which is crazy.
It's not, but this is at a time when, you know, really before pay-per-view, and pay-per-view, pay-per-view is in its infancy. At this point, there was pay-per-view, but this is the first time for the Rumble. It was on, as you said, the USA Network. And a lot of these USA specials that they did, like Saturday Night's Main Event, the main event was usually either on first or in the middle of the show. And then they would close out the show with a match that nobody really cared about. And the reason why they did this, according to Bruce Pritchard, is because the shows ran late at night and they didn't want people falling asleep during the main event. So that's why they put them on early in the card, and then they would end the show. Like Royal Rumble 88, the main event, the last match, is actually the Young Stallions against the Islanders in a 2 out of 2 falls match.
It's so weird. But at the same time, I kind of agree with that concept.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I mean, you throw your main event in the beginning or in the middle. You know, I think about like maybe watching events with my stepdad, and by like the middle of the event, he's snoring on the couch, and then he'll wake up the next morning and he goes, "Oh, who won the last match?" You know, and that makes sense, right? You catch him, you draw them in, you get that main event. It's just like, yeah, here's a 2 out of 3 falls with 2 tag teams. Okay, great. I mean, but yeah, and it's funny too that there's two 2 out of 3 fall tag team matches on this card. Right, I mean, they must have liked it for the tag matches.
The
undercard prior to the Rumble, because it's not the main event. You had Ricky Steamboat versus Rick Rude.
Great match.
That was given 2 stars by Meltzer. Jumping Bomb Angels, which was Itsuki Yamazaki and Norio Tateno. I hope I did that right. Versus the Glamour Girls, Judy Martin and Leilani Kai. Now it's for the Women's Tag Team Championships, held by the Glamour Girls. Who lost it to the Jumping Bomb Angels in that they called them ladies champions. That was given 3 stars at all. The Glamour Girls were with Jimmy Hart at the time, and the Jumping Bomb Angels win the titles there. You have your Royal Rumble match, and then you had the Islanders versus the Young Stallions. That's Jim Powers and Paul Romo. I didn't mean to laugh when I said Jim Powers. 2.5 stars there. And you know, then you had the Royal Rumble itself. And then in between they had some weird Dino Bravo attempting to bench press like 715 pounds on the card. And they also had the contract signing for Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant for their rematch to WrestleMania 3. And that was famously the main event where, you know,
Hogan lost
the title to Andre, who then gave the title to Ted DiBiase. But then there was a whole, like, paid for reconstructive surgery for Earl Hebner, which was really, you know, his brother, Dave, and the whole shenanigans that involved it
about
the WrestleMania 4. Right. So there was some buildup to another bigger event. The fact that the Royal Rumble smack dab in the middle, I mean, all right, whatever, I guess so. But yeah, you know, short card, but then again, it's also a televised card. It's not essentially a pay-per-view.
There was really nothing, there was no prize for this as we've become used to with the winner winning the opportunity to face the champion at WrestleMania. So the first four Royal Rumbles did not have that. We didn't get to see an actual prize for winning the Rumble until 92 when Ric Flair won it and won the WWE Championship in the process. And then 1993 started with the winner of the Royal Rumble getting the WrestleMania main event title shot. And Yokozuna
was really, the first. That was essentially the first one where they actually said the winner of the Rumble would receive the title shot. Because Hogan won it in 91 and then went on to face Sergeant Slaughter. But it wasn't implied that because he won, he got that title shot. He was just essentially the number one contender.
Right.
And then Ric Flair winning the belt in 92. And then, yeah, Yokozuna winning in 93 was the official start of the whole I'm going to be the number one contender. And then, you know, then you would have later on in the 2000s where Reigns would defend the title at the Royal Rumble again. And that would be the first time where the champion went in and actually defended the belt in the Royal Rumble match, which is actually a pretty cool concept. But anyway, digress here. We're talking January 24th, 1988, the Cops Coliseum, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, if you believe that. First Royal Rumble. And there's going to be some little tidbits as we go through here, right? Who was the first entrant in the Rumble? Who was the first person eliminated? And then obviously you know who the first winner is. But just because it's the first, there are so many firsts in general when you're looking at this match. So it's pretty cool. And I got to be honest, I haven't seen this match in a very, very long time.
Me neither. I think I've only watched it maybe twice ever. Like the first Royal Rumble. I think I've watched the Royal Rumble match itself twice and the whole card once.
I've probably seen the whole card, a total of once. The Royal Rumble match I've seen, I think in its entirety, probably one time, and then I've seen bits and pieces here and there. Honestly, I've never actually sat down again. I was like, hey, let me watch the 88 Rumble again.
You know? It's not one of those ones that really stick out, even though it is the first. It doesn't stick out among, I mean, there's been so many.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, especially when you're like, I mean, when it comes to that, when you think about this Rumble, it's just the fact that, it was the first one. And it's
that's really like it. There's no, like, that's the only historical relevance to it is that it was the first one.
All right. So, I mean, I think with that being said, we click on our WWE Network. You follow along with us if you're at home. You go to WWE Pay-Per-View. You click on Royal Rumble. Go to 88. And then the lovely thing about this site where you can go to the different tabs and just go to the 1988 Royal Rumble match. And if for some inane reason you have not updated your app on your phone or what have you, you are at 1 hour, 17 minutes, and 32 seconds. That's where we're starting here. Are you with me here? Chris, we're good?
We're good.
Chris said, all right, we're going to count it down from 3, 2, 1, and we're going to play. Get a little audio here in the beginning. The Fink, rest in peace again. Another one we lost this year.
Yep. Yeah.
So here's a concept that we're seeing here as I meet the Fink here. The first two entrants, we didn't get the now let's find out who's number one and who's number two. Bret Hart and Tito Santana
already starting
in the ring. However, if you look at the official entries, Bret Hart is number one, so he is technically the first person ever in the Royal Rumble match. Way to add on to your resume there, Bret.
Yeah, another accolade to Bret's legendary career.
Yeah, and I do believe he is the quote-unquote Iron Man in this match. I think he goes about 25 minutes before he's eliminated.
Yeah, I think so. So he's another first, the first Iron Man competitor in the Royal Rumble, if you will.
Yeah, and then you
which
got
would Mr. become. Yeah,
that would become a staple.
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah, at the time, I think Tito Santana here is one half of the tag team champions with Rick Martel and Strikeforce. You got Bret Hart here, who's now, I believe he's a heel at this point, because he has Jimmy Hart in his corner as the manager. He's wearing some aviator glasses. He's looking real jacked there. Way to go, Hitman. And like nice little pink and black going on, but a precursor to the later Hart Foundation years. He looks looking fit. Tito Santana, on the other hand, looking a little slender there, buddy.
Tito's a legend. No doubt about it.
Yeah. Oh, hands down. Great work in the ring. Former IC champ himself. And now, after introductions are done, little pan to the crowd, and now we have started the match. So as we said here, you're doing, you know, over the top rope, 2 feet hit. They're doing a typical tie-up. Bret Hart, man, was just so great in the ring.
He's in my top five for sure.
I think he's my one. Honestly. It's funny, so, you know, at the time, they put him with the Anvil and they put him with Jimmy Hart because he was uncomfortable and nervous when he would do promos.
Right.
But, you know, based off of that alone, when they eventually break up the Hart Foundation, did you think he would go on to be that big of a star? I mean, based on wrestling and his ability in the ring alone, he would have been a great mid-card guy, which eventually was. He became the IC champ. But then on top of that, you know, world champion, he became, you know, certified Hall of Famer, have legendary matches. Would you expect that when he first, you know, I wonder if Vince and them expected that out of him when he first debuted. And imagine if he would have went with the original gimmick of Cowboy Bret Hart.
Cowboy Bret Hart. I mean, for me, my earliest memories of watching wrestling was like 93, 94. So Bret was already the guy there. He was already the champion. He was already their main eventer. And he was the Hitman. But I think just based on what I've read and heard said about Bret, there was a lot of guys that felt that he had the potential to be a great competitor because he was a great singles worker. And I think Ricky Steamboat was the first one to point that out behind the scenes to everybody that he was, you know, that he should be a singles worker.
We have our next guy coming out. It is the Hacksaw Butch Reed as he comes out with his blonde hair. So he is number three.
Butch Reed was supposed to be an IC champion too. As I was saying about Bret, there are some that have said that he wasn't as good as maybe we think he was.
I beg to differ. I mean, that guy, I don't know, for me, with the exception of a few of his WCW years, the man did not have a bad match in WWE.
No, I can't remember one.
Even with matches against, like, you know, Jerry Lawler or, you know, Isaac Yankum, the soon-to-be Kane, where the gimmick was maybe a little hokey, but he would carry people to good matches. You know, he gave Diesel some of his better matches in WWE. Him and Razor had a good one. You know, it's just, I don't know. I mean, I think people, you know, when they do the criticism of Bret Hart, yeah, he was a great worker, but he never drew as a world champion, you know, and stuff like that. And the business was down at that point when he was the champ. Yeah. But they were shifting focus. They wanted to move away from the big muscle gun guys after the steroid trial. They started giving these other guys, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, more opportunities, and, you know, it paid off for them, man. Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart, arguably the two greatest in-ring performers, right? Shawn Michaels, Mr. WrestleMania, probably the greatest in-ring performer we've ever seen in our life. You know, my earliest memory of Bret Hart is the SummerSlam 1991 match for Mr. Perfect, IC title. Mm-hmm.
That's a great match.
In terms of singles matches, and that's a fantastic match. Guys, if you've never seen that, go and do it right now. All right, so there was no countdown for the next guy, but here comes Jimmy the Anvil Neidhart, Bret Hart's tag team partner. Oh, Bret Hart almost eliminated there. Jim Neidhart walks right past him as he's walking into the ring. Doesn't bother to help his partner out, even though they're in a tag team. And, okay, so there was no countdown for that one. Not even sure if Jim Neidhart's supposed to be out here at this point. Let's hear some commentary here. Hold on.
Yeah.
And both Butch Reed and Jim the Anvil Neidhart are holding him for a backbreaker as Bret Hart comes off. So apparently he was supposed to come out. There was just no countdown. Probably a mishap in the production truck. Commentary team, though. Jesse Ventura and Vince McMahon. I used to love when Ventura would call Tito Santana Chico. Just like those little racist innuendos that he would just throw in there. My God.
So you got the Hart Foundation. How about this dream tag match right here? Hart Foundation versus Doom. Butch Reed and Ron Simmons.
I know. And to think that the Hacksaw would go on to form that nice tag team. And be under mask initially, too, which is weird.
At first, yeah.
But they were just badass dudes, man. That would have been great.
They were.
Absolutely. All right, so now here's another countdown after they missed the last one. It started from 13, which was odd, instead of your traditional 10. I guess they're working out the kinks here. It is the first one, so, well, you know, got to let them slide here. Here's the next guy. It is, Jake the Snake Roberts to a fairly big pop in Ontario. He's rolling now. Now he's going to help them out. Oh, Butch Reed is the first person eliminated in the first ever Royal Rumble. There's a little stat for you, for all you trivia freaks. And he is now freaking out. Look at that. Look at that punch. Jake the Snake, another one. So good in the ring. One of the best to never hold a major title in WWE. But I feel like at that point, you know, there were certain people that were just so over that they really didn't need a title to get them over, if that makes sense, you know?
Do you agree with that concept, though?
I mean, I yes and no. Somebody like Jake, I would have loved to see him out of run with an IC title. The fact that he never had one was crazy. The fact that the Million Dollar Man never had something other than the Million Dollar title, I thought he would have been a great heel champion, world champion. Yeah. Like, they should have just let him run with that belt, and just him and Macho at WrestleMania 4 would have been fantastic, you know?
Yeah, he only had the tag
belts. Yeah, you know, he had the little run with Money Inc. But I don't know. I think for the 80s, yes. I don't think a title was needed if they were that over. Guys like Jake, guys like Ted, even though I like to see them with it.
Pile I really driver. Think that, you don't see much of that anymore.
Yeah, but look how dangerous that was, too. He didn't fall flat on his butt. He kind of fell on the side. Oh, King Harley Race is now next.
Isn't it crazy that we forget that Harley Race was actually in the WWF?
It was just very, yeah, and he was like the whole King gimmick on top of that. He wasn't the same handsome Harley Race that he was when he was in his NWA days. He was a little pudgy around the waist at this point. He had a nice curly blonde afro going on.
So weird.
And that whole King concept, you know, first him, Macho Man, was Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and then him and the Macho Man, King Haku. I mean, we're seeing it now with King Corbin. I would love for them to bring back the King of the Ring on a consistent basis. That kind of just came into my head now, because I think Corbin has really ran with it. It's nice, but I think they could really crown somebody new. And I love the tournament concept, especially something like that, like a King of the Ring. You know, if they use it properly, build up a new star and bring them along, you know, a heel, somebody like Corbin. Yeah, I think he's done really well with it.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a network special. Would have been great.
I love the King of the Ring, but I'm tired of the winner becoming the king. Like, I'm running with that gimmick, though. I think it's a little old.
I think with a
King Barrett, King Sheamus, you know.
Yeah, I think, like, with a heel, it makes good sense. You know, I'm the king. When it's a babyface, just like, yeah, I'm the King of the Ring. Thanks, guys. You know, I famously, here's our next entrant here. Triple H hated wearing the crown, so he would destroy it every chance he got.
Is this B. Brian Blair?
Oh, it is. One half of the Killer Bees, right?
Jim Brunzel.
Oh, it was Jim Brunzel. It's the black and white stripes that really get you, because, you know, they look old. Oh, he's a house of fire walking in.
Brian Blair. Brian Blair is more famous for Iron Sheik's rant.
Yeah, he'll break his back and make him humble, you know? So as of right now in this Royal Rumble match, we have one complete tag team and two halves of two other tag teams. A lot of tag team wrestlers here. And two single stars in Jake Roberts and Harley Race. I mean, there is a lot of, I do got to say, though, there are a lot of Hall of Famers here right now, right? I mean, this being 88.
Yeah. There are, Jake, yeah.
Neidhart, Bret Hart, Harley Race.
The only one not is Jim Brunzel.
Yeah, you know. But, you know, not everybody can be in the Hall of Fame.
Even Jimmy Hart, right? Jimmy Hart's in the Hall of Fame.
Indeed. You know, I always hated the in the Royal Rumble match, the almost I need a rest, so I'm gonna pretend to get you in the corner and try to lift your leg. You know, at least Menzel there has Harley Race on his shoulders trying to get him out, and like Harley's holding onto the ropes. But like Jim Neidhart's really like Jake Roberts is on the floor, and Jim Neidhart literally just has his arms around Jake's head. It's like, what are you doing here? He's taking a break, but it's like you're not trying to eliminate him. Oh, Sam Houston.
Jake Roberts' brother. I never knew that.
Jake Roberts' brother. Also, Rockin' Robbins' brother.
Yeah.
That's the little family they got there.
I never knew that. Until recently.
I didn't until, I don't know why I was in like a research rabbit hole late at night and was looking up stuff about Jake Roberts and noticed that they were actually related. So you got a set of brothers in there. But his tenure in WWE was short-lived. All right. I mean, he was an 80s guy. He was there, and then he kind of just left.
Yeah, he was more, I think, more of a star in one of the territories. I don't know which one, but not much to speak about in his WWF run.
Yeah, nothing to write home about there. You know, very Southern, though, right? Cowboy boots. He has the hair, the bandana around the neck. I mean, if you didn't know, he's probably from Texas. Just going to put that out there, right? I mean,
maybe Houston. Sam Houston. Oh, there goes Tito.
And, oh, Tito Santana eliminated by the Hart Foundation. I like that they actually teamed up, though. That was good. Tag team, get him out. And now we're going to work on Jake Roberts while Jim Neidhart's just yelling at Tito Santana. All right, here's another one. Why are they starting at 13? That's so weird. Like 13, 12. No, you start at 10. I mean, whoever worked that out, bravo, because 13 is stupid.
Oh, God.
Oh, it's Dangerous Danny Davis with that.
Look at this outfit.
What is he wearing, dude? The black and white leotard with the white, like, dry fit shirt. I don't even know what the hell that is.
The referee turned wrestler.
Is he also an ally of the Hart Foundation at this point as well?
I think so.
You know, surprising that you have one of your best workers in Tito Santana and you eliminate him so early.
Yeah, that is surprising.
That leaves a lot to be desired here. I mean, especially with, you know, in terms of, you know, singles. Harley Race is doing a nice little get up here where he's like swinging on the ropes and coming back every time Jake Roberts punches him in the face.
How about that matchup? Harley Race and Jake Roberts.
Yeah, man. Harley Race, another one who has passed on in our wrestling lore, man. Rest in peace to him.
And yet Jake Roberts is still alive.
Yeah, man, he's like,
I mean, not that I wish him dead, but.
No, not at all. He's the Keith Richards of WWE, huh? Or wrestling in general, probably.
He cannot be killed by conventional weaponry.
Yeah, exactly. He probably sleeps upside down. That's a Wayne's World 2 reference for those who don't get or forget that. Yeah, I mean, you got Danny Davis in the corner with Jake Roberts. I mean, look at this right here. Jim Neidhart literally has his own leg on the top rope while he has Sam Houston in the headlock and hit him in the head. What are you doing there? Right? Let's get some rumble logic here. You don't want to get eliminated. Right. Here's our next guy. Who's coming out here? We have 2-1, and it is Boris Zukov.
That's right. Yeah, Boris Zukov.
It is one half of the Bolsheviks. And correct me if I'm wrong here. If commentary serves me correctly, I think somebody came out by accident. Maybe it's not him. Maybe it's Nikolai Volkov. But then again, here's another half of yet another tag team in this Royal Rumble match. Right.
A lot of tag team guys used.
I get Ricky Steamboat and Rick Rude were already in a match, right? But like, where is Macho Man? Where's Ted DiBiase? You know, use those single stars to make this more relevant. I mean, I know you're trying to counter program the Bunkhouse Stampede here, but you want to come and see these guys. I mean, mostly it's the, hey, let's see this contract signing between Hulk and Andre, right? Or bring some more of these mid-level, mid-card guys out. You're having a bunch of, it's pretty much essentially at this point, almost like a tag team battle royal.
I think, if I had to guess, I'd probably say that they didn't want to use the bigger main event guys just in case this was a fail.
In that case, too, yeah. And, you know, we would see later on in the later WWE years with the Rumble, like this would be used to establish storylines for, you know, WrestleMania matches or future feuds. And in this one, this is essentially just a battle royal. Whoever wins, wins, right? This is not setting up any type of long-term storytelling, any long-term feud, you know, that you would see, you know, in the later Royal Rumbles. So, I mean, yeah, I could see that. But at the same time, it's like, dude, I came here to see the Bolsheviks and one half of the Killer Bees. I mean, I love the Hart Foundation, but, you know, just want to name the two worst teams there. Here we go. Look, Barzukhov, Justin, Harley Race, already got him over the top. Oh, Danny Davis with a shitty drop kick. Way to go. And again, the countdown starts at 13. What is going on here? Currently, I mean, the ring's pretty packed here. You got 3, 6. You got 8 guys in the ring right now. I always like it when it's a little full.
Yeah, know? Me too.
You don't want it too full because then you can't see what's going on. Who you got? Is that Don Morocco followed by Nikolai Volkov? Okay, this is what I mean. Here, let's turn the commentary on here. Oh, no. Don Morocco just clocked Nikolai Volkov in the face and then walked into the ring. So the Don Morocco's legal man. And why Nikolai? Was that an intentional slip up?
I was just going to say, I think that was part of the show. Maybe. I don't know. You're talking about a guy who's put together. Don Morocco is huge.
Zukov's going to be eliminated anyway. And all Nikolai Volkov is saying is, it's my turn. That's great.
Well, what's funny is he's actually the next guy. And they just let him go in when the clock runs out.
So he just stands there. He just stands there. He argues and says, it's my turn. The countdown goes on. And then they're just like, oh, yeah, okay, go ahead now. We've been holding you out for the 2 minutes. That's insane. Harley Race here turning in a nice performance of leaning against the ropes. Every time I see him, he's leaning against the ropes here. Don Morocco, if he wanted to, could just throw everybody out there. This guy's built like a freaking... He is jacked, man.
Yeah, the original Rock. The Rock Don Morocco.
He is the quintessential 80s... Look at the 80s wrestler, man. Just abs on top of ab, muscle on top of muscle. I mean, no wonder they got freaking taken to court later on in 93. Jeez. All right, here we go. And now this one... 14. I mean, listen, whoever's in the truck, get it together. I don't know if it's Kevin Dunn at this point yet. But here we go. Another 5-4. I want to see what they say about Nikolai. There you go. Jesse Ventura. Next guy up. Got him. Volkov. And now the referees literally just part like the Red Sea and they let Nikolai Volkov in. Oh, my God. So that's 2 whole tag teams that we've seen. Bolsheviks, both members. Hart Foundation, both members. Oh, Brunzell
almost got it. Oh, there goes Molly Reese.
See, the leaning against the rope strategy eventually came back and bit him in the ass. And now he got eliminated. There goes handsome Harley Race. I'm sorry, King Harley Race. Forgive me. And now we're back. That looked like Don Morocco because Jake Roberts has been on the floor for a couple minutes. And now Harley Race doing the heel thing of trying to get back in the ring, shoving the ropes. And he's just like, listen, I like to lean on the ropes. Let me just lean on these ropes.
When did they start the... because you have the Iron Man concept, right? And they did that pretty often, and every year it'd be who's the guy that's going to last the longest. When did they start the concept of what became known as the diesel rule, where like you had that one guy that would just clean house until someone threw him out?
I think they actually start, I mean, they don't really recognize it, but this year I think the person who has the most eliminations in this one is the one man gang. I think he actually eliminates 6 guys in this one. Mm-hmm. Again, starting at 13. But I think there was concepts like that. There has to be elements of people shining, right? The one person's your Iron Man, the one person who has the most eliminations in the Rumble, whether he sets the record or not. And oh, here comes Hacksaw Jim Duggan in very odd black and white getup, black tights, white knee pads, white boots. Not the typical blue that we were used to seeing him in the 90s, but with the 2x4 nonetheless.
I mean, is there anyone that sucks more than Hack? Oh,
Harley Race going at it. How dare you?
He hit Harley first.
Shot at him. I mean, he pushed Harley Race out of the way. Harley did defend himself. So he goes to chase after him and then gets distracted and stops and walks back to the ring. So thank you, Hacksaw. Way to get one back on Harley Race.
I think he is one of the worst superstars ever.
Really?
Yeah, I was never. He's just so awful. I don't know. I just always never liked him.
You know what I would have liked to have seen, and this is before he got in trouble with the Iron Sheik in that car that kind of pretty much derailed his big push in WWE, but apparently when he was in the other territories, he was a badass brawler, and they brought him in WWE, wanted to give him a big push. based on that gimmick he had. And, you know, he ended up getting in trouble with Iron Sheik, heel and face in the car at the time. And, you know, had a little bit of drugs in the car, I think weed and some alcohol and stuff like that. And that derailed him. And then he essentially became, you know, this American Patriot Hacksaw Jim Duggan, where his gimmick was the 2x4 in the flag and shouting out USA. And
I mean, he was over. There's no doubt about it.
He was hella over. Oh, here's the next guy. Who is this? Is this the Outlaw Ron Bass? Yes, it is. He was over, but if I knew the Hacksaw Jim Duggan, the Hacksaw Jim Duggan match to me was the time to get a donut match every time.
Yeah, I just always, listen, I'm no wrestler, but he was just always like sloppy and just goofy.
He used to throw, and I'm trying to show Chris on the video here, but he's like, he would throw like these wide punches.
Yeah, these wide punches. Yeah.
You know, he'd make this face and then, you know, just shout out USA a lot. Then
he's always drooling and cross-eyed. And I was just never into him.
And the fact that when he came to WCW, he was in like 10 seconds for the US title. It's like, what the hell?
There goes Brunzell.
Oh, there goes Brunzell. Shout out to the Iron Sheik. Volkoff did it for him. One half for the Brian Blair. Oh, Don Morocco going up and over in the corner. Bass is trying to push him up and at the same time looking like he's slipping because all the baby oil on Don Morocco's chest.
What number are they up to?
Pretty good to know. I should have kept track. See what happens when you get lost in the sauce here? But there at this point there is 9 people in the ring, right? Oh, back to 14. You know, these guys need to get it together.
There's only 20, and I feel like they're in the teens. They're probably close.
Yep. Oh,
here comes Brian Blair running into the camera.
On the way out. And so now that's officially 3 sets of tag teams that have been completed. Bolsheviks, Heart Foundation, and the Killer Bees.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to count the brother team of Sam Houston and Jake the Snake Roberts. Oh, look at that. Danny Davis was starting to fall before Hacksaw Jim Duggan gave him the clothesline. I mean, at this point, right? I mean, so from what I hear, if I'm listening to, I think it was an interview with CM Punk, they essentially, the wrestlers, and I don't know if this was for the 88 Royal Rumble, but they would get a list of when you're entering and who's getting eliminated. So they would get a list of entries and eliminations. And then it's up to the wrestlers to essentially fill in the gaps with the match, with the exception of like the spots they want to put together, you know, the big spots in the match that probably Vince and the creative put together in that case.
Yeah, I always wonder how they put it together. It's probably
it's incredibly good. It has to be, right? I mean,
I always deciding how they did it.
Comes in when, what number, what elimination, and now it starts at 13 again. It's our next entry, and putting it together. Here we got 4, 3, 2, 1, and this is Hillbilly Jim.
Wow.
Another Hall of Famer in the ring. Wow. Another one who's built. The overalls did him no justice, man. He had a good physique.
Yeah, he did. He was a big guy.
But another one who was hampered by a silly gimmick and a pig farmer known as Hillbilly Jim. Jim the Anvil Neidhart, man. Rest in power, brother.
That lady was very excited to see him eliminated. She jumped out of her chair.
Out of her seat, right? She must be a big Hillbilly Jim fan. Canada loves Hillbilly Jim. Oh, there goes Danny Davis on the top turnbuckle. Uh-oh, Danny Davis is begging. Oh, you want to punch him? You want to punch him, audience? Oh, there it is. And one punch and brings him back. I think as we go through the years here, the Royal Rumble logic is not sound logic. Okay? Look at Hacksaw Jim Duggan. I'm trying to get you over, but I'm going to strangle you on the ropes first, then hit you with the elbow and let you fall to the floor.
Blair almost out, but he saved himself.
Sam Houston is extremely skinny, by the way.
That's very skinny.
You got all these like muscle-bound physiques in this ring, and then you have skinny Sam Houston who looks like he's 14 in there. Oh, this one started.
And it started 14. It's either 14 or 13. 14 or
13 here. Here we go. Now we're at the official 10 count. We're at 5. Who is the next one to be entered? And, the Canadian Strongman, Dino Bravo. Another one. Rest in peace, my man.
Did you watch his Dark Side of the Ring episode?
I, I did, man. If you haven't watched it, go and check it out. It's pretty good. Oh, man. And he
Yeah.
was huge in Canada.
He was,
Huge.
yeah, Montreal, big star there.
All right. I mean, you want to solve maybe the Canadian equivalent of Hulk Hogan. And there
Oh,
goes.
there goes Sam Houston.
Oh, you know what?
That
Ron
was a
Bell,
big call.
that might have been the move. What was
The move
that?
of the match right there.
That might have been the move of the match. Guy was on his shoulders. And by Rumble logic, you would fall backwards in the ring to keep him in the ring for some reason. But no, instead, he went to the top rope and kind of just dumped him over. Smart move. Way to go. The Rumble logic was sound with my man there. I think Dino Bravo, I think the another one, whereas he came in to WWE thinking they were gonna use him for how big he was in Canada. And when he kind of didn't get to that status of where he was, it's a blow to the ego. You know that for sure, but
Yeah, I mean, they bleached his hair. They changed him up, and he wasn't used to being positioned the way he was in WWF.
they could have done a lot more with him. I would have liked to have seen maybe a tag team title run with him and Earthquake together, when they had their little stable going. But here he's accompanied by Frenchie Martin
Yeah.
with his beret and his long coat, Jacques Le Bleu. Here's another. Oh, there's the
Oh,
Ultimate
there's the
Warrior.
well, I didn't.
That's
I
the
forgot he was in there.
biggest star in this match right now. But you know what? This is
'Cause
88.
before,
This is
yeah.
prior to, his big explosion for five and six. This is prior to WrestleMania
At
four.
those
So at this point,
chops.
he's still a mid-card worker throwing me heavy mediocre chops. Oh, there goes
Through
Bret Hart.
Bret. Bret Hart
25 minutes,
eliminated.
the Iron Man. Way to go. Ultimate Warrior is throwing the shittiest chops I've ever seen. I know he wasn't a great in-ring worker, but God damn it, he was just pure physique, dude, and energy. And here in this particular one too, did not run to the ring. He was kind of just maybe still finding himself here as the Warrior, and he's literally just leaning against Dino Bravo on the ropes
And look,
until he
here's
got.
the countdown. The count that happened a lot quicker than previous.
That had to have been not even a full minute
Yeah.
from Warrior to there's
Up,
the One Man
one
Gang,
man gang.
AKA the African Dream, Akeem. Which one did you like better? I kind of sided with the Akeem gimmick.
I just liked his theme song.
Oh yeah,
Well,
the
even though that
WWE.
was Slick's theme song, but
Yeah.
one man gang, I don't know, I was he was whatever to me.
Twin Towers, underrated tag team.
Yeah, him and the Bossman. Yeah, definitely. He was another just huge guy.
Ultimate Warrior is just walking around. Oh, now he jumped on One Man Gang on
Oh,
the back. Which is not sound Rumble logic. You see what I'm saying? I'm going to keep hammering this home for every Rumble we watch during this series. Rumble logic is not smart here. Oh, there goes Reed Barnes, the One Gang.
you remember the? I think it was Royal Rumble 2000 when Road Dogg just kept hooking around the bottom rope.
That was hilarious. But
That
that's smart
sound,
Rumble logic.
that's smart Rumble logic. Oh, there goes
Oh,
Jake. Wow.
Nick Roberts. It's two for One Man Gang. Oh, see? Ultimate Warrior lifts Danny Davis up by his neck. And drops him in the middle of the ring. That is not sound Rumble logic. Ultimate Warrior might be the worst performer in this ring right now. And I'm not talking about actual, I'm talking Rumble logic here. He
He
was
got
in the
raked in the
match
eyes,
for a
though.
minute. He's already leaning against the rug. The Junkyard
JYD.
Dog. There we go. Another legend. Another one that has passed on, too. Wow, we have a lot of those. Nikolai Volkoff, Dino Bravo, Ultimate Warrior, Junkyard Dog. Man, rest in power, all those guys. So I believe
JYD.
JYD is our last entrant. If correct me if I'm wrong here.
So he's number 20. He might be number 20. So JYD has the distinction of being the first last Rumble,
Last man.
if that makes sense.
So currently, Hillbilly Jim, Junkyard Dog, One Man Gang, The Terrible Ultimate Warrior, Ron Bass, Danny Davis, who somehow is still in there, but Jake Roberts isn't. Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Nikolai Volkoff, who just
He
got
just
eliminated
got thrown
by
out.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And I think that's it right now, because he just got.
So you said
How is Danny
terrible Ultimate
Davis?
Warrior. Are you not a Warrior fan?
Now, no, not terrible, like I said, in terms of ring presence. I'm talking right now and his Rumble logic that is really asinine. He is just at this point walking around the ring. Now, am I a fan of the world? I'm a fan of the Ultimate Warrior character and gimmick. And he's had some great matches when he needed to pull off the great match, WrestleMania 6, WrestleMania 7 with Savage.
Yep.
But
That's it.
overall, I mean, that's it, man. I mean, I just didn't like his after post WWE antics, his little speaking trips he used to go on that were, you know, that we largely ignore now because he's a Hall of Famer. And I think this is Danny Davis. Oh,
he's
Jim
gone.
Duggan using the 3-point stance clothesline, his finisher to eliminate Danny Davis. But yes, Warrior, with regards to the stuff that we gloss over now because the Warrior War is named after him, you know, racist comments and misogynist thing. Ultimate Warrior eliminated.
Look at that, just thrown right out of there.
By one-man gang, Don Morocco, Dino Bravo contingent. And he really did not have a great showing in this match. But then again, this is not the Ultimate Warrior we would be seeing in a year from now.
Right.
You know, he wasn't as popular at this point. If this was Royal Rumble, you know, in 90 or 89, he'd come in like a house. And JYP. Wow, surprise by the outlaw Ron Bass.
It went down to 5.
And Junkyard Dog came in at number 20. Oh, Ron Bass, Ron by Don Morocco. Here's your final four. Dino Bravo, Don Morocco, One Man Gang.
Ron Bass threw himself over the top rope there.
Did he really?
He looked like he just ran and threw himself over.
I mean, was anybody huger down in Georgia than, I don't even know if huge is a word, but Junkyard Dog, right? And then he comes to WWE. He has a nice little run, fairly popular, but you think he comes in at number 20. He doesn't even have really a good, that good of a show, and he just gets thrown out. The most glaring. Oh, wow. Don Morocco looking agile there. Escaping the
did it again.
You know, for a muscle bound guy here, doing a little tumble salts left and right. Oh, that was a terrible drink. Frenchie Martin
on the apron.
And gets a boot to the head. You know, that was actually good sound rumble logic, right? Manager interferes, uses that to gain an advantage on him.
Nice move there by Dino.
Absolutely. I'll tell you this, though. There are, you know, we can wait
for what's coming here.
Oh, yeah, here we go. No, he.
Wow, yeah, she did.
Okay, I'm sorry. Is that the first time that's ever worked ever? When a heel grabbed a guy and the guy did not duck? He actually hit him when he held him.
2-on-1 now. One man gang and Dino Bravo.
In my 35 years of life, that's the first time I've ever seen a be successful. Their face did not duck. Yeah. And he went over. Not to mention that he went over the top. He hit his butt on the apron. Didn't stop himself. And scooted off the apron.
Jumped up.
So now at this time, we're down to our final three. Hacksaw, Dino, One Man Gang. Hacksaw clearly the face here with the two heel characters. Now they're teaming up on him. I'm going to call here, and I haven't seen this in a long time, Hacksaw doing the duck, and that's how Dino Bravo gets eliminated. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but maybe that happens. I don't know.
I think that's how One Man Gang gets eliminated.
So that makes a lot of sense. Because it can never be twice successful. Nope, there it is.
Okay, yep.
I called it, and look, ducking, and there it goes. Oh my God, that was terrible too. So he hits Dino Bravo with the clothesline. Dino is slow to get over the ropes, and you know, One Man Gang literally pushes his butt over the top rope.
Final two.
Instead of acting surprised, he pushes him, and then he's like, "Oh, what happened?" Oh my God, you know, One Man Gang looked like. He ran so hard into those ropes, it looked like they were going to snap when he hit them on the way out.
That's a big boy.
Nice little sugar skull on the side of his head there.
Final two of the Rumble, your first ever Rumble, One Man Gang and Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
So you had your first ever final two, your first ever final four, and these are the last two guys in the ring. I mean, I know they would, you know, One Man Gang had a fairly significant run here. I mean, he would look good in a... He would have his little tag team run. I don't know why. I mean, imagine them coming to you and saying, listen, you were the One Man Gang. You little badass came out with the little mohawk. We want to change all that. We want to make you Akeem the African.
It's over right here.
Here it is. Using his own momentum against them. Sounds Rumble logic for the win for Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
I love Jesse Ventura's commentary here. I think we might have missed it, but Jesse Ventura says, of all the people who could have won this thing, it's Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and I agree.
That's incredible.
Wholeheartedly.
The crowd is huge, though. Look at him. Everybody loves Jim Duggan here.
He was over. There's no doubt about it, but...
Jesse Ventura, Jim Duggan tripped and fell and toppled over. He's not trying to give Jim Duggan no credit whatsoever. See, it's not over. Up next, the Hulkster. So yeah, this is in the middle of the event, and they have an interview with Hulk Hogan immediately after. That's crazy.
Yeah, not really a whole lot of emphasis put on it, even though the event, it's called Royal Rumble. That was the first ever Royal Rumble. But it was just like, we're doing this. Okay, now let's move on. That's kind of how it felt like.
The logic, how you explained it before, it makes sense. It's a big match. And now at this point, people who are probably going to stick around for the Hulk Hogan interview, and they're not going to tune into the tag match at the end.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can't say I blame them.
I wouldn't either. These guys.
But I mean, you know, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, the first ever Royal Rumble winner.
So out of 5 stars, what would you give the first ever Royal Rumble here?
2.5.
So I'll tell you that Meltzer gave it 3.5 stars.
Okay.
2.5. I'm going to go with a solid 2. There were some decent level stars here, but you're missing a lot of your mid-card guys. There were just a lot of tag team wrestlers in there. It seemed like, you know, who was it? Jim Neidhart, when he came out, there was no countdown. And, you know, I know they're still working out the kinks here, but, like, you know, if you really want to get your audience involved, right, there is nothing more involved than when you see that countdown from 10 to 9, right? The crowd really gets into it. And the fact they play the theme music now, like, even then when they weren't playing it, you know, seeing that 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, you know what I mean? And then getting the audience involved, there was just a lot of, I mean, I'm sure this wasn't the first battle royal these guys have done before, but dude, there's a lot of rope leaning. There's a lot of rest holes. There's a lot of, I'm going to, you know, pretend I'm trying to eliminate you, but in reality, we're both standing in the corner leaning on each other. And the match wasn't even that long. You know what I mean?
No, it wasn't long. 30 minutes, maybe?
Maybe. We're talking, wait, what was that? We started at 1 hour, 17 minutes, so give or take a little bit over 40. For all that, there wasn't a lot of, you know, the ending was nice with One Man Gang and the setup with Dino Bravo, how they actually got Don Morocco out, which sets up that next elimination there. There was good pieces of storytelling throughout, but, like, a lot of these guys were phoning it in, you know? Whatever. Two stars for the first ever Royal Rumble, 1988.
I'd say 2.5 because, we have the, you know, benefit, lack of a better word, of looking back after watching all of the, how many are they up to? From 88 to 2021 now, how many Rumbles is that?
Oof, what is that, 33?
So 33 Royal Rumbles that we've seen, and this is not one of the most memorable ones, other than it being the first. So, you know, I'm sure that at the time when, you know, someone like Dave Meltzer watched it when it happened, it was exciting, it was new, it was fresh, so he gave it a high rating. But when you compare it to all the other ones, there are so many that are better. But it is the first, and you can't take that away from it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're talking about hindsight, 2020 vision here, right? I mean, right. You know, we're watching it, you know, over, 30 years later, and we're like, yeah, they could have did this better, they could have that better. But in reality, like, when we watch it for the first time, we probably on the edge of our seat, like, oh, damn, look at who's coming out next.
Exactly.
You know? And, you know, Meltzer, for the time, giving it the star rating he did. I would agree in that case. Us, me, looking at it now, it's like, Jesus, dude. Like, how many times are you going to wrestle the road? I mean, Ultimate Warrior literally came in. They screwed up the time. So, like, not even maybe a full minute later, the next person comes out. And his whole run in the Rumble was essentially, like, a few shitty chops, him standing in the corner trying to eliminate people. And a lot of the times he looked just aimless in the ring. He's just like looking around, looking for something to do.
Anybody throw worse chops than Ultimate Warrior?
I don't think anyone does anything worse in terms of that than the Ultimate Warrior. Punches, chops, general just lack of, you know, ring awareness, you know. I'm kidding. But you know, there was a lot of, I mean, the gimmick was over huge. He was over huge. He had some legendary matches, but the bad outweighs the good for the Ultimate Warrior, in my opinion.
So now let's let's play this little game here. So obviously 88 Royal Rumble, I mean, this came out when me and you were both like 3 years old. Yeah. And it's easy for us to play armchair quarterback, but we're going to do it anyway. If you were booking the first ever Royal Rumble with the same guys, who would you have made win this match?
Ted DiBiase.
So DiBiase wasn't in it.
If you're talking about the people who are currently that were in the Rumble itself,
right?
Okay, because I would have seen the reason why I picked DiBiase, and that was immediately off the top of my head, just because what was going to happen in the main event, right? Him winning it would make more sense when he buys off the WWE title. Then essentially, he doesn't really need to win it. But I just feel like this was prime setup for a heel, I think, to win initially. But you know, the home, you know, you have the crowd here; they're big, they're huge. You know, was Hacksaw the right call? Maybe, just because if you hear the pop when he comes out, it is pretty big, man. And Ultimate Warrior wasn't the Ultimate Warrior yet, you know. If I had to pick one person, maybe Jake the Snake Roberts, just because, you know, he was fairly over at that point. But I don't think anybody essentially that was in this match is over to the level that we know them to be over at that point. Not even Jake. You know, I think maybe Hacksaw maybe was the right call. They brought him in with a lot of fanfare. You know, they wanted to give him a monster push, and this was the way to start it, by him winning the Rumble. I mean, the only person I say make the argument now, if I really had to think about it, it'd probably be JYD, because he came in with a lot of heat from down south, coming up to, you know, New York and stuff like that. But I honestly do have to say, for as much as we say, like, yeah, we're not huge fans, I think Duggan was probably the right call here.
Yeah, I think so too. And if you're forcing me to pick someone, I probably would have gone JYD. But I think you're right about Hacksaw being the right choice at the time to win this match. And so he has the honor of being the first ever Royal Rumble winner.
And that's really, I mean, if you think about Hacksaw's career, right? He had the King of the Ring, you know, and then he has this Royal Rumble match. And his WWE career in terms of accolades, that's it. Never has a major title run. Never has another significant win again under his belt. But I mean, he's so popular and becomes so popular also in the 90s that, like, he essentially rode that all the way to the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Yes,
wow. Oh, well, whatever, man. Hats off to Hacksaw. Get a drink for that one. Way to go, guy. I mean, he always hang his hat on that, though, right? I mean, he won't be like Virgil, lonely in the autograph table. He'll always still have that first one of the Rumble, right? I mean, when you're only the first one time, so.
That's sad. I feel bad for Virgil.
It's hilarious, though. There are certain things that you just can't help but laugh, and that's just one of them. But anyway, I digress. Whatever. All right, so I mean, first one down in the Royal Rumble series, 1988. We're gonna come at you next week. First one for 2021, hopefully. You know, hopefully everyone's healthy and everyone's able to move on. I gotta tell you, so far so good. Looking forward to the next one. We're not gonna reveal yet just what we're watching. We're gonna pick our brains a little bit, see which one. Which, like we said, we're gonna go probably one from every decade in the weeks leading up to the Royal Rumble, which we're going to enjoy a great deal. If you guys have any ideas of which ones we should watch, at Wrestling Guys PC. My brain is all over the place today. So at Wrestling Guys PC on Twitter, give us some recommendations. Tell us what you thought of the Royal Rumble 88, if you've seen it, or go watch it. Watch it with us. Look at the shitty chops that Warrior throws. Look at the great leaning on the rope stuff that Harley Race does as well. Top notch shit. Hall of Fame stuff.
Yeah, and just watch the first ever Royal Rumble match.
It's crazy how there's so much content on the network that you just, there's so many things. Like, I like the Bunkhouse Stampede. Like, I think at some point I will probably throw that on just to check it out. But, like,
yeah,
you know, you gloss over so many things, and the amount of documentaries they're putting out too, which are top notch. And I just, right before we started recording here, I go onto the network and it's like the top matches of 2020, and I'm like, oh my god, already.
Yeah,
you know, right. Like they just crank out content like it's nobody's business, man. I mean, whatever. I mean, as we go through here, we want to wrap it up here. We're done here. We're done with our first watch along. We hope you guys enjoy it. We hope you are looking up Wrestling Guys Podcast at anywhere. Podcasts are available. That's where you're looking us up. And you want to give us a like. You want to give us a subscribe. You want to give us a 5 stars. You want to give us a nice rating. You want to make us more prevalent in that searches, because that's what we need from you. You enjoy what you're seeing. You let us know, and you put it out there. And if you want us to improve, you let us know too. I'm gonna tell you to fuck off, but I'm gonna go do my best. I kid, folks. I kid. But please,
constructive criticism,
comments, concerns, constructive criticisms. Yes, we'd love to hear it from you guys. We appreciate the people that are you know, stuck with us, still listening through our little COVID fiasco. We hope everybody there is staying safe. Before we sign off, Chris, do you have a New Year's resolution for 2021?
Ooh, you know, I've never really done that before, but I guess this year maybe I will for the first time. I mean, on January 1st, literally that day, I'll be moving into a new apartment, and yeah, I guess my New Year's resolution would be to just get to that next level that I've been working hard for a long time. So hopefully that'll happen. And I also would like our podcast to, you know, kind of take off, and, you know, really want to try to, you know, give everything that we can into it and get back what we can. So yeah, that'd be it for me. What about you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. My resolution is just to get through this year. Hopefully it's better than the last, and everyone stays healthy, and everyone in the family stays healthy as good as we can. Hopefully this vaccine does what they say it does, and we could just move on, and one day we could reach into our pocket and find a mask and look at each other and be like, "Oh, you remember that shit? We had to wear it everywhere." You know, that's what I hope is happening. So. It's not a personal resolution. It's a world resolution. I hope it comes to an end pretty quickly. And with that being said, Happy New Year, everyone. Say goodbye to 2020. Wear black. Put that shit to rest. We're on to 2021. Bigger and better things. And hopefully we could all see you outside. We could share a drink together in person and not have to do this shit over Skype. And with that being said, this has been the Wrestling Guys Podcast. We came to talk about wrestling, drink some virtual beers. We're just about all out of beers. Rest in peace to John Huber. Rest in peace to Pat Patterson, Danny Hodge, and everyone that we lost in 2020, whether wrestling or otherwise. We love you. Godspeed. Wash your fucking hands. Wear a mask out there. We love you. Take it easy.